If I seem like I'm yeah, I am. Gee whiz. This is the coolest for me, though, because we got a few hours here. We can talk about the 12 steps. We can talk about the program. Now, by the nature of what I'm going to try to accomplish here, I can assure you that I'm going to say some things that some of you guys in here don't agree with. And I just, you know, I think that's just so okay. When do we get in our fellowship to a point where we have to agree with everything everybody says? You with us? But is it, we get so, she's coming. Y'all need to be careful coming up on my blind side, because I'll kill you if you're not careful. Is it, talking to the lady, oh, I didn't know you couldn't see out of that side. Y'all could be on fire and naked and I wouldn't know it. I just, so if y'all need my attention over here and begin, you know, say something, because I got you bastards covered. You know, we got you. These guys are, I work for a treatment center, and I do clerical work for a hospital. I'm not a counselor or a therapist, but I've been around the industry for a long time, and I've got some pretty strong opinions about that. And I was such a chronic relapser, guys. I was in and out of the fellowship for so many years, and I was in therapy for 10 years, and I was on... when I tried to commit suicide in 1987, I was taking 7 pills a day, doctor-prescribed medication, and all of this was... you know, being swallowed with mass quantities of alcohol and cocaine and methamphetamine. And but the pills were a real problem. My detox was hugely compromised by prescription medication that the doctors were lovingly giving me. You know, you seem a little tense. I am. Well, here, this will fix it. Yeah. And it was also a good diet, because everything you put in your mouth just fell right out. You know, you're just, oh my gosh. And I see it. I'm nonstop. I travel all over the world, and no matter where I'm at, guys, it's the same story. You know, we've got a lot of well-meaning people out there trying to help us get well. So we may talk about some meds today. We may not. I don't know. But anything I say from this podium, guys, is what I'm trying to tell you. I got you for an hour, and then we'll go smoke, and you guys can decide if you want to stay or not. That's always an interesting experiment. But because y'all love me as long as you're agreeing with everything I say. And the minute I hit on something that you don't agree with, then, well, he just can't talk to us that way. I'm out of here. I didn't come here to be preached to. You know, it's like, rock on. I didn't come here to blow smoke up your butt either. You know, so, I mean, I'm here to share my experience with you. And my experience might be different than your experience. A lot of us in this room, we got here through treatment centers. I happened to walk in the back door of an AA meeting. That's how I finally got sober in 1987. And our experiences are a little different. Some of us have other mental issues going on besides alcoholism. I suppose I qualified for that too. But all of this to say is that we all got here from different paths. Our experiences are going to be different. So I try to come at this thing kind of with an open mind. You know, we ask the newcomer, you know, we want you to be open, honest, open-minded, and willingness if you want to get sober. It just seems like the door shuts about 2 years sober, you know, 3 years sober, 10 years sober, 20 years sober. It's like, if it goes against what I believe, then I'm not listening to it. Man, shame on us. Every day they're making new advances on alcoholism and drug abuse. We're learning new things. We're seeing new techniques, new... I'm going to listen to anything, guys. I'm going to listen to the little 6-day sober guy in the back talking, and I'm going to listen to the old 60-year-old geezer talking. And I'm going to filter it through a thing called a Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I can reconcile it with this, man, this may be good. You follow? If I can't reconcile it, it may be just a bunch of BS. You follow? What works for one may not work for the other. But what we know without a shadow of a doubt is the information in this book works for everybody. There's so many people out there in AA land, out there on the internet, taking shots at people in recovery, taking shots at our 12-step fellowships, because there's so much misunderstanding about it. If I've got one bone to pick with New York, it's that we never stood up and took care of the people that were talking crap about our fellowship. Oh, they can say anything they want. Why? Because most of it's based on not true stuff. I'll give you an example of what I'm talking about. Some of y'all gave me the answer. Reading the crowd, it's like this. If I know I'm losing you, it's like this. Your head goes, what's he talking about? I'll give you this. years ago in early archival stuff, you can read about this. Bill Wilson and Dr. Bob, those first cats that got sober, they all understood that you could recover. On the title page of the damn book they wrote said, this is the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. You'll follow? Of course, the treatment centers in the United States got busy about 1971 as a result of a wonderful piece of legislation called the Hughes Act. And we had a treatment center open on every corner. They were like Tim Hortons in the United States. You couldn't turn around without walking into somebody else wanting to verify your insurance benefits because, buddy, we pay like slot machines. That's back in the day. I mean, everybody from Canada came across the border and got treatment in and down in the United. Well, we got a bunch of you at the hospital where I work, still do. And but the treatment centers all put their own twist on this, and some. I'm trying not to cuss here. And some idiot who was trying to get somebody to stay in treatment a little longer than they needed to came up with the old idea, well, we didn't get sick overnight, we're not going to get well overnight. We'll always be recovering, which is great for the treatment center industry because I want you to recover, you with me? But as a customer, I prefer you to be recovering because then I can guarantee to get you in treatment a few more times. Now, folks, this is just the fact. You're sitting in this room thinking that you can't recover. You need to come see me after this is over. You need to come. We need to visit about this because that is a misrepresentation of what this program is about. Listen, folks, I'm 21 years sober. Could I get sick again? You better believe it. If I stop doing the things that I'm supposed to be doing, I can get sick like that. I watch people do it every day. It's one of the reasons I'm so passionate about this. But this idea that we have this little crappy self-help program that's going to allow you, but only one day at a time, to get well, makes me want to puke because it's not verified in the literature, and our experience abundantly confirms that that's not true. There are people in this room that are going to recover. They're going to get well. And from the podium, we need to be sharing that to the newcomers so they can get some hope. One of the reasons that we can't keep the young adults in our meetings. Who in the hell wants to be a part of a fellowship that guarantees that you're going to have to admit that you're sick every day? I mean, I understand the need for humility, buddy, but I mean, this is a little ridiculous here. And some of you, you know, you're thinking, guys, you've got that look on your face. Good. I hope I say a bunch of stuff today that makes you think, that makes you question what you're doing. Because all of this is geared to do just one dadgum thing. It's to help us be more effective with the people we sponsor. My job, I believe, I was saved from the dumpsters of Houston, Texas, so that I could help another drunk get well and have a cool life to boot. I just believe that. And I watch just untold thousands of people that get well and go out and do the same thing. But I watch so many more people that get well up to a certain point. I'm not drinking one stupid day at a time, but I'm miserable. You'll follow? Thought of suicide is constantly on me. I'm eating prescription medication like it was going out of style. But I'm sober today. And we have a fellowship out there that seems to want to make that okay. And it's not. It's not representative, buddies, of the fellowship that I know and love. There's two things going on in AA. I see it in CA. I see it in Narcotics Anonymous. There's two things happening. We've got a thing called a fellowship, and we've got a thing called a program. And over through the 70s and 80s, our fellowships grew. Membership in Alcoholics Anonymous doubled and doubled and doubled again. A lot of people were coming in. Our success rates dropped through the stinking toilet. They got big deal down in the States now with all the statistical stuff coming out. Well, we proved that the success rates were just as good today as they were back then. You know, buddies. Any of us that have been around the rooms longer than 6 months can tell you that that's just not true. I mean, I don't know what to tell you. I sponsor a bunch of guys, and I mean, I watch them just no. You do a sobriety countdown sometime at these big conferences, and you watch the little knuckleheads. Of course, in certain areas, you'll get a bunch of people at 20 years. You'll get 5 or 6 people in there. Rock on. That's a pretty good deal. You get on up towards 30, 1, 2, maybe 40. You with us? Come on, guys. Get down to one year and you'll have 400 people stand up. Well, what happened between 1 year and 5 years? The guys that did the statistical stuff, well, they just don't come to AA anymore. Yeah, you got that right. Because they're drunk. Everybody wants to get tweaky. I tell you, I'm a card-carrying member of this fellowship, and I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I love Cocaine Anonymous. I love anything. There's a great new fellowship in New Jersey called ANA. It's a National Association of Recovered Addicts and Alcoholics, and they're just a bunch of little thumping bastards. I mean, they got no traditions, no nothing. They're just like little gunslingers. Let's go find somebody to fix. And you know, I love them. You know, any fellowship that tries to get you connected spiritually, how can you find fault with that? You know, it's the coolest. People get tweaky. Well, I think you're taking AA's inventory. I am. Let's just get it out in the open now. I'm. Oh my gosh. I love my fellowship, folks. But things are goofy in our fellowship. Things are goofy in lots of places. I love my treatment center, but things can get goofy there because we got too many people sharing opinions about something that they should know about and they don't know about. What gets alcoholics and addicts sober? Little brother back there pointing, yeah, it ain't the roof. Yeah, absolutely, brother. Come on, guys. It's God that gets us sober. We're going to talk about some of that. This is not some kind of little self-help program. So all I'm saying, I'm in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for 7 years, and I can't get sober. I can't pick up a 30-day chip. Why don't they give us a two-week chip, damn it? I'm good at 2 weeks. I'm a two-week wonder. In the 2 weeks, my house is clean, my car's washed, everything's taken care of, the trash is out, I'm washing clothes. God, life is, woo, sobriety rocks. 2 weeks in one day, I'm sitting outside of a 7-Eleven trying to talk myself into not going in and buying a beer. And I've done this over and over and over again. I was what we call one of these functioning alcoholics. I know some of you because I recognized you coming in the door. This is exactly what you are, you know, because we all don't hit skid row. And some of you guys, we've been insulated by money and by our beauty, our looks. Some of you guys are you're too damn smart. You've been insulated by your intelligence. Makes sense? It's my prayer that every single one of you that are having trouble staying sober wakes up in the morning poor and ugly, and you might get this. Yeah, and sure, whatever you, yeah. Oh my gosh. I can stop for periods of time. In Alcoholics Anonymous, they jam me pretty good in that. Chris, I don't know what you're doing wrong. If you just go to meetings and don't drink, you're going to be good. It's like, you know, at the time, and I'm sitting there, little minds grinding, you know, go to meetings, don't drink. I mean, I understand it's computing. I just can't make it happen. The meeting part I got, I'm a meeting-making fool. Meeting makers make it. I got you. Okay. But I'm proof positive that meeting makers don't make it. I'm proof positive that people that are real alcoholics and real drug addicts that just make meetings gradually go insane and either take their own life or go drink again. And a lot of nodding heads in here. We were talking last night on the death march from the board. No, we were... Those guys are good. We were going at warp speed. It's a good thing I don't know how to compute miles per hour to kilometers because we were really going fast. I don't know. In Texas, we were laughing with Ron. And in Texas, when it snows like this, we close the state down. And a lot of y'all nodding your head because you've been down there. We don't know how to drive in this stuff. It's like, slow down, slow down. You know, we never would have gotten here if we would have been in Texas. But, oh my gosh, you guys are pros. Because I'm going to have the last laugh because a bunch of you guys are going to be in San Antonio. International AA Conference is going to be in San Antonio, my hometown, in 2010. And no, you can't stay with me. Let's just get this out now. But what I got to tell you, it's going to be last laugh because you know when it is? It's July. First week in July in San Antonio, Texas. Y'all are going to die. It's just going to be... You think the hinges of hell are hot. Oh, my gosh. And it won't be like those idiots in Phoenix. Oh, but it's a dry heat. It's not, I can assure you. Oh, God. Bring a pair of shorts, a t-shirt, and oxygen. That's all I can assure you. It's going to be good. All y'all making fun of me freezing to death for so many years. Anyway, so in 1987, I've tried everything. I've tried AA. It drives me crazy because we see people all the time. I've tried AA. Well, did you work the steps? No. Then shut up. You didn't try. You know what I'm saying? But you didn't try AA. But that's, again, that's where the people out there on the internet are taking our inventory. You know, 90 meetings in 90 days, and I didn't get sober, so AA doesn't work. Well, who came up with that crap anyway? I'm not a big 90 meetings in 90 day kind of guy. I'm a, hey, go to as many meetings as you can possibly go to and work the dadgum steps. Take the steps so that you can have the necessary spiritual experience and recover. Then you can tell me it doesn't work. Because I've never seen one single person come up and tell me that. That's a fact. The people that do the work, folks, get well. I don't care if you're schizophrenic on top of it. You get well. You pick up two chips, but you get well. So what? That's so stupid. That wasn't even funny. That was so not funny. Okay. But I'm in and out for the 7 years, and I'm in therapy. I'm just, you know, I'm doing positive affirmations until the cows come home, and I'm not knocking any of that. I benefited from every bit of it. I still see a therapist occasionally. I'm a huge advocate of therapy. They can get you from point A to point B pretty quick. A good therapist that knows what they're doing, especially if they include God in the deal. So it's, and I'm doing detoxes, and I'm outpatient. I'm doing treatment, and nothing's working. I'm in the church. I'm trying to do this in the church. I've sat naked in sweat lodges, and not this kind of cold, but I mean, it's in tech. But I went to churches shaped like pyramids, and I mean, I did anything. We were laughing the other day. I did colonics to try to get sober, the vitamin regime and colonics. Some of y'all don't know what that is. It won't do a damn thing for your drinking, but your complexion will be flawless, I guarantee you. It'll clean you right up. And you'll feel better than you've ever felt in your life. And it's like, I think I'll have a drink, and you're off to the... So I tried to commit suicide in 1987. I'm working for my twin brother, so let me all know Myers, and with Primary Purpose in Dallas. And you know, God love him. You know, he we were both drinking. We were best drinking buddies. And if it hadn't been for him, I'd been on the street. I'd spent a short time there in Houston. But again, I'm a functioning alcoholic. I'm bouncing back. And before you know it, I got a few $100 in the bank again and a little girlfriend. And, well, usually they weren't so little, but... Thank God for big women. Anyway, I am just saying it like it is. And I got up from picking up a stack of return checks and went to the medicine cabinet and got a couple of bottles of pills and took them. So many people I've watched commit suicide, and guys, there's just nothing romantic about it. There's nothing in me that wanted to be dramatic. There's no note or nothing. I was sick and tired of feeling the way I was feeling. We were talking about it earlier. You know, people that are not alcoholics and drug addicts and our family members, they know we're tortured. They can watch us. But the depth at which we stew in our own juices. When I tell you I'm going to quit and I know that I mean it, I don't mean I'm blowing smoke sometimes. You know, hey, baby, I'm going to quit. You and me. And it's like... But there were times I told you I was going to quit, and I knew I was going to quit. I wanted to quit. I needed to quit. And I was just done. I don't know why I've been acting like such a kid all these years. I'm done. And we're going to go down, and we're going to be adults about this, and I'm just finished. And I thought I had the power to choose whether I was going to do this or not. And that's the beautiful reading that we did before. Page 24 is one of my favorite pages. It's amazing to me how many people... You want to start some controversy in your next AA meeting? Bring page 24, the first two paragraphs, as a topic. And watch the room empty. Because most people will say, I'm an alcoholic. I have a fatal progressive illness. I have a disease. But I can choose to pick up or not. Guys, it's all over the world. And all I can say here with all the respect that I can muster, if you can choose to do it, you're not one of us. Don't let the big door hit you on the way out. Because you're killing people with that stuff. You're killing people with that stuff. You're telling people that they can choose to do this or not. You can choose to work the steps. That's a choice we got, isn't it? Y'all chose to come here on a cold, dadgum morning. That's a choice you got to make. We make enough of those choices, guys. We're going to stay sober the rest of our lives. We're going to do the things necessary to stay spiritually connected. But this idea of presenting alcoholism and drug addiction like some kind of behavioral problem must be stopped. And the problem is we're seeing it in our meetings as much as we're seeing it in treatment centers. I tell you, you watch somebody die of end-stage alcoholism, and the sad part is the treatment centers have pulled all of that away from our groups. When I first started trying to get sober, you'd sit there in a meeting and say, buddy, you don't look so good. All of a sudden, have him flop out and do a grand mal seizure right in front of you. All of a sudden, it brought this whole thing very close, real close to home. You can die from this crap. For some people in this room, alcoholism and drug addiction became an inconvenience. And you put the plug in the drug and you stopped. And you wonder why all the yelling's about. He sounds angry. What's he pissed about? One day at a time, I stay sober. What's there to talk about? But I understand that, and you're welcome. But I said, but you've got to understand, Bill Wilson, in the big book, we're going to talk about it in a second. Bill Wilson talks over and over. Three different places in the book, he describes the different type of drinker. The different kinds. He continues to distill it back down to, but what about the real alcoholic? What about the real alcoholic? What about the real drug addict? Which implies that there may be some of us in these rooms that are not really alcoholic. Bill Wilson understood it. Make sense? Book says on page 34, if you've got your books, you could read them on page 34. We did this in ISIN one time, not realizing that all the page numbers were different. So all that great planning on my part was right out the window. For those who are unable to drink moderately, drug moderately, the question is how to stop altogether. We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. You stop right there. Now, one of my jobs as a sponsor, one of the things we're going to talk about this afternoon in one of these little sessions is some sponsorship stuff and working with others. And one of my main jobs, like the first job, is to qualify the alcoholic and the addict that I'm sitting across with to find out if I'm dealing with the real McCoy here or am I dealing with a little disco drunk. You follow? Because a little disco drunk's going to crap out and I'm not interested in wasting my time on those little knuckleheads. I want the real mad dog, like me. Because they're the only ones that can relate. We're assuming, of course, that the reader desires to stop. Whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or not. This is the baffling feature of alcoholism as we know it, this utter inability to leave it alone, no matter how great the necessity or the wish. Isn't that cool? It's saying quite clearly here, I'll translate it for you. If you can stop without God, you ain't one of us. And I mean stop, folks. I've just told you, I can stop on a dime for 2 or 3 weeks, a couple of months. I've done it 1,000 times. I can't stay stopped. My head always tells me it's time to go back. That's what we're going to talk about in a second, this qualifying business. And I'm just saying, see, this is what makes you uncomfortable. I sit in here and talk to you, and the little guy says, God dang, that's me. We're swapping spit, sending Christmas cards to each other. But the little guy in the back sitting there thinking, he's been questioning whether he's an alcoholic or an addict or not, and now we talk about it out of the book, and he thinks, you know, I might not be an alcoholic. I hate that man's guts. You follow? Unbelievable. Everything is based on truth, guys. The one thing that you've got to have in order to get well in this fellowship is the ability to be honest. Would y'all agree with that? It's what it says, and reread how it works. If you can be honest, I don't care what else is going on in your life, but we base our so many sobrieties based on it on half-truths, untruths. Am I an alcoholic suffering from a fatal illness, or am I a hard drinker? There's a difference. Am I a drug addict? Because you can be one and not be the other. Am I a drug addict or a drug abuser? It's two different things. We have to look at that. If drinking's my problem, then detox is as hard as it's going to be. My buddy Danny up in Maine says it best. But if I'm an alcoholic, detox is just the first part. You'll follow? That's been our experience. The hard part is not getting detoxed. Y'all may think it is, when you're in it, you certainly do. You hurt like a son of a gun, especially if you're detoxing off those stupid pills. You stir on a spit for 6 months. It's just terrible, horrible. It's the next wave we're going to see, guys. The pill epidemic coming towards this direction is going to make the crack epidemic look like kids' play. Because the doctors and the stupid pharmaceutical people are working overtime telling us that we can take these pills with impunity. The problem is if you happen to be a real alcoholic and you eat those pills, you're in trouble. We're going to talk about some of that. Anyway, I took the pills and swallowed them down, and I heard a voice that night that said, "Don't do this, go back to AA." And I'm arguing with a voice because I ain't going to go nowhere close to AA again. And I picked up my last desire chip. But I heard the voice two or three times that night, and I laid down on the side of the bed. I made myself sick, and the next morning I heard the voice one last time. And it was the same voice, same stuff. "Chris, don't do this. Go back to AA." And I went to a doctor and got some doggy downers, and I went to work because I had to work or I'd be on the street. And at 6 o'clock that night, I was parked on a day just like overcast. No, not anywhere close to this cold, but overcast. But I was sitting behind this, and I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt, and my head's already saying, "Chrissy, Chrissy, Chrissy. You know, you're so dramatic, you know. I mean, you know, last night, a suicide attempt. Today, we're going to walk back in and going to pick up a desire chip. Why don't we slide on home, go buy Kentucky Fried Chicken. You haven't eaten. But remember, Chris, you don't want to get too hungry, angry, lonely, tired." I'm sure Living Sober is some of y'all's favorite books. It is not mine. Because that's why. I think I can fix me. If I just go get a meal, everything's going to be okay. Rock on. Okay. And I'm thinking, and I think I had my first spiritual experience as I got out of that old beat-up pickup truck and I walked in the back door of an AA meeting. And I'd never been to this meeting, but I walked in and it was one of the shotgun rooms and everybody was carrying a big book and laughing their butts off. And they were all smoking. Back in the day, we could smoke in meetings. And can y'all still do that in Canada? No, back in the day. We screwed it up. If the smokers had been able to smoke one cigarette, we'd have been okay. But they got to be like six at one time. "I'll show you. The only requirement for membership is a desire not to drink. I can smoke." "Oh, okay, rock on. Now you've ruined it for everybody." And I was right there with them, but the ceiling's smoking, and I'm blocking. And I walk in, and it's smoky, and they're laughing, and I know they're laughing at me, and I'm really self-conscious, and I haven't bathed in a few days, and I've got a big old foot of beard, and patches perpetually crooked, and I'm just, they're laughing at me, not with me, at me. You with us? Big Book says, page 62, "Selfish and self-centeredness, that we think is the root of the problem." Y'all understand this? It's all about me. And I walked in, and of course they were just laughing about something else, and I start to walk out, and this little girl slid up next to me, a little 19-year-old girl, and snugged my belt loop and snagged it and set me down in a chair. She said, "Sit down, cowboy. You're not going anywhere." And this is how God works, folks. If you'd have done it, you'd have been dead. You follow? No, because I can kick a guy's butt, or at least try. Usually works the opposite way with me, but God, does somebody say, "Chris, did you ever win a fight?" Never, ever, not once did I walk away. Taught his ass, not once. I'm always laying on the ground. "That's the best you got, you pussy." "Oh no, just be quiet, buddy, just be quiet." You think I'm mouthy now. Some of y'all are the same. I can see it now. But this little girl pulled up there and she took my breath away. I mean, what are you going to do? You can't smack her. I sat down. And God used this little girl to get, her sponsor had seen me trying to leave and she said, "Get him." I mean, this little girl wasn't off in some little young adult meeting talking about young adult things. She was in mainstream AA doing exactly what she was supposed to do, trying to help another drunk. She didn't give a rat's butt what gender he was. Bless her. I'd have been dead, folks, if she hadn't, because I was a head of steam behind me to leave that room. I was thirsty and didn't feel well. Bad combination for Chris Raymond. And we sat in the meeting and they talked about it. Y'all have heard my story 1,000 times. They went around the room and they talked about hope with me and they shared miracles with me. Not one person in those meetings shared a stupid war story. Not one. Been in AA for 7 years, and every time I'd come back in, "Well, this is a first step meeting now. We have a newcomer. Let's tell Chrissy how we got here." Why? I know how you got here. Same way I did. Is there any hope besides this? Is there any future to this? Can you wake up in a few days and not obsess about alcohol? Am I ever going to get laid again? I mean, can we talk about something that matters here? And you're going to tell me one more stupid war story? I get emails from all over the world. I got one from Africa. No kidding. I was bringing it. This guy was pissed. He heard me talk about this from the podium. He said, Chris, all we have is our story. I'm so sorry. If all we have is our story, we're in trouble. Because my story never got me sober. Victory Book on page 17 says we have a common problem. That's one element in the cement that binds us. Y'all follow? All I got to do is sit down with you 10 seconds and visit a couple of seconds, and we're friends forever. I understand the connection, the identification. Now, the next sentence says, but we have a common solution, and that's what ties us together forever, is the common solution. But we never seem to get around to tell the newcomer about the common solution because we're too busy trying to scare them in the rooms with the stupid war stories. Number one complaint, guys, that I hear from people coming into the fellowship is, I don't want to go back to AA because I don't want to listen to any more war stories. And I understand that. Dr. Bob understood that. He wrote extensively about it. In the early days, they didn't sit around and talk about their war stories. There's two places that they would share their story. And it's nobody else's business. From the podium is a great place to share a story. Make sense? Friday night, let's hear your story. I want to hear what you've lived through. In a 12-step call, down at Tim Hortons, you got a drunk over there. You slide over next to him. You tell him a little bit about your story, and he tells you a little bit about his, and pretty soon y'all got a little rapport, and then you can set the hook on the old bastard and get him to come to an AA meeting. You can talk to him about how you got well, but he's not even going to listen to you unless he thinks that you understand where he's coming from. I'm not saying that our stories are not important, but don't throw that crap back at me that it's all we have is our story. Those people's war stories didn't keep me coming back to that group. It was the hope that they shared with me in those meetings. Some of you people, you want to take exception. I had a guy the other day rolling his eyes. Oh, great, just what we need, another gratitude meeting. Yeah, I think so. I think so. I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt. I'm ready to make the ultimate sacrifice. Y'all understand? Check out for good. And now you want to give me some more war stories to add with my own. Gee, thanks. Why don't you just give me the bullets for the gun? No, come on, guys. These people went around. They said, we've seen him up here in North Texas for years picking up chips. Let's see if this cat'll stick. Let's go around and share some hope with him. And they did. They talked about credit cards and jobs and money and dating and sketch pads and art. And damn. Rock on. The old geezer after the meeting came up and said, Chris, you want to stay sober? Are you done? And I said, well, one day at a time. He said, that's what I thought. He said, buddy, I need to explain this to you. And I understand that people do that. And if you really need that little parlor trick to keep yourself sober for a few days, rock on. But that's not what the book says. The book says that we live life one day at a time. Every day is about today. Y'all understand that? Because I can be present today with y'all and not be worried about what's happening in my hometown of Ingram, Texas. Because I'm here with y'all today. How cool is that? That's what Bill Wilson was talking about. He didn't say we get up every day and decide not to drink. I can't imagine anything more painful than that. Y'all understand? It's a tough decision to make once. And now you're asking me to make it every day? Oh my God. He said, Chris, one day at a time, we're going to show you how to live life. But it comes with a commitment that you want to do this for keeps. Are you down with this? And I said, yes. And he hugged me like only people in AA can hug. God dang it, just big old arms and just. And the next day they were on my doorstep and they brought me back to a meeting. And we went to a meeting in the morning and then we went in the back room and chased a bunch of Al-Anons out of their meeting. And they were in there just talking and we had serious business. We got on our knees and did a third step prayer. They asked me if I had a problem with God and I said no, and we did a third step prayer. And after lunch, they gave me a notebook, and we started working on a fourth step. Boom, boom, boom. Been in AA for 7 years, never worked a single step. Nobody in 7 years had ever qualified me. You with me? Well, you're an alcoholic if you say you are. No, you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous if you say you are. you have to have certain symptoms to be an alcoholic. And if you don't have those symptoms, you ain't us. We're not collective membership here, folks. This is life and death for us. The sad part is, the millions of other people out there that are dying, not being able to hear the message, because there's too many middle-of-the-road SOBs killing them with their opinions. Does that make sense? That's pretty hard-headed. I probably shouldn't have said that. Let me look at my phone. What's the clock? 2 weeks later, I sit on the tailgate of my truck and I have this spiritual experience. The realization that the obsession to drink and do other outside issues has gone. And I don't know when it lifted, folks, but the obsession went away. And I'm a cat that could not not drink, could not not obsess. And it happened, and I cried like a girl sitting on the end of that truck. And I went up to my apartment and cranked up some hot jazz and some rock and roll and washed the dishes and realized that I was on solid ground, that the promises were coming true. And this, guys, this was not as a result of being around the fellowship for 7 years. This was as a result of some good sponsorship that I got when I walked in the back door of an AA meeting in Louisville, Texas, and pulled my head out of my butt and started doing the work. In order for this to work, you got to do something. And we kill the newcomer every day when we just tell them, well, what you have to do is just come back. Why are we telling newcomers that? Come back. Keep coming back. But work the steps. In my home group, we have a bunch of accountability. We have a bunch of people that are holding each other accountable. And that's exactly what we do. We're going to talk about it later. But you come into my group a couple of days in, you're right, and I'm watching you. And if you're not sitting with a guy that's in the group, I'm going to say, buddy, what's up? You haven't got a sponsor yet? Let me help you get one. Because I've got a nest of sponsees that I sponsor that can sponsor you. You follow? And I'm going to make sure that somebody grabs hold of you so that you've got somebody to bounce stuff off of when things get crazy. You think you're going to come back to my meeting and dump your crap on our table so we can clean it up. Our meetings in Ingram, Texas are not dumping ground for personal problems. You can do it here in Canada if you want. They're called open discussion meetings. If that's what you want to do with them, that's great. But we go to literature-based meetings where we talk about God and the steps. That's the only reason. And afterwards, we go out to the picnic table. Everybody loads up, big old pocket dip, and smoke some cigars, and everybody starts talking. What's going on with your life? Because we want to know. See, the fellowship doesn't stop at the door of the meeting. The fellowship is... God, I've been so blessed. People take that stuff out of context. Every talk I do, they say, well, but if I couldn't have talked about my problems when I first got here, I never could have stayed sober. I understand that, sweetie. You selfish bitch. But let me ask you a question. Sometimes cussing can be humorous, and so that's why I thought... Oh, I understand that, but how many people did you kill in the process with this? This is, I've never said from this podium or any other podium, I've never said you shouldn't talk about your problems, because you should. You with us? That's what this is about. That's what sponsorship's about. That's what fellowship's about. Y'all follow? We were talking, coming over, about a lot of the guys in the United States are losing their job now, the financial stuff. God, I mean, how did we screw things up so bad? You know, the ripple effect is getting our neighbors on both sides of the... I don't know. And we're talking about that. We've got lots of people in the program that are hurting financially and needing... Gosh, for me to stand up on a podium and say we don't need to talk about that? Of course we do. But in the meeting, the little guy picked up a meeting schedule at the probation office, and he's sneaking in the back door even as we speak. And he's sitting down and he's saying, let's see what these guys have got. But we're not going to get a chance to talk about the spiritual experience that's going to change our lives, because we're too busy talking about your stupid weed eater one more time. Oh, but if he doesn't talk about that weed eater, he might drink over that weed eater. Y'all understand where I'm at with this. We need to talk about the weed eater. But the little guy came to hear about a solution to his problem called alcoholism. But we think it's perfectly okay for us to take a meeting time up talking about our day. And I'm just here, I just disagree. Thanks, Mom. I know, really. So, let me tell you what we're going to do. We're going to kind of show you what I do with a guy, with a newcomer. There's lots of people, like, you get somebody like Ron who's been sober for a period of time, and he come and ask me to sponsor him. I'm going to sponsor him different than I'm going to sponsor a little new guy that's just coming in. You know, got a little fried pie. You know, the little newcomer look and looks like me. I know. Really. My first wife said, "I'm the only guy that could wear a tux and still look like I crawled out of a dumpster." We're not married anymore. When I get a little new guy, what we're talking about is we're talking about how to get them through the work quick. One of the biggest mistakes that I think we make in all of our fellowships is that we take too long to get these people connected spiritually. Our job in AA and CA and NA, and I agree with NA, don't have a bone to pick with any of these fellowships. Our job in these fellowships, though, is to get the newcomer connected spiritually. Over the years, what happened is we got vague on that. My job is to get you connected to God, whatever your understanding is. We're going to talk about that quick and fast. My job is not to fix your problems. And the big book is quite clear that when we allow a newcomer to start depending on us for their money, for their job information, y'all with us, relationship problem, when we place ourselves in a position to be a counselor and a banker and a doctor to the newcomer, then why in the hell does he need God? And then when we give him the wrong information because we're not trained to do that, then he can just say, "Well, you guys screwed me up." We need to do what we're supposed to do, and that's show them the path to God. Everybody gets tweaky about that. Oh, this is not about God. This is not a religion. I didn't say it was a religion, but it is a spiritual program. And I got to tell you, we're going to hit it hard today because we're seeing so many people. I know it makes some of you squirm, but it's like, what do we got to sell, folks? I mean, people come to Alcoholics Anonymous. We say we have an answer. What is the answer? But you can sum it up and say that. It's the 12 steps that gets us connected spiritually. Because ultimately, what got Ebby sober? A spiritual experience. What got Bill Wilson sober? 9 days in Towns Hospital. Last week, December 11th, was his admission date back to Towns Hospital. Bill Wilson had been in that hospital 3 other times previously and had left AMA all 3 times. You with me? Yeah. How many of you guys ever got a head of steam up like that? I'm going to get sober, and you show up to detox and they start weaning you off the detox med and you say, this is not a good idea. Maybe a better time, and we're out the door. And that's exactly, and Bill Wilson left 3 times. In 1934, December 11th, he admitted back to Towns Hospital for the 4th and last time, where he completed treatment. You with us? Y'all are going to hear me talk about this word commitment a lot. We got a lot of people straddling the damn fence. I want to get sober, but I don't want to get sober. I want to get sober. You know, I'm talking to a guy yesterday, said, "Chris, I just don't know if I want to get sober or not." Rock on. But what? You want me to talk you into getting sober? Go drink! Because if I chase you, I'm going to ruin my opportunity here. You with us? I'm going to be here when you get ready, when you decide you want to go do this. We're not selling something here. But what we have to offer the newcomer is the spiritual experience. What did Bill Wilson, 9 days in Towns Hospital, working the 12 steps? He's making his amends letters from the hospital. Ebby's working with him in the hospital. 9 days in, 10 days, and he has his barn-burning spiritual experience. Everybody thinks he had this experience, and then, no. He was working, doing the work, and then he had his experience. You'll follow? Dr. Bob, same thing, had a spiritual experience. Bill D., number 3, lawyer, spiritual experience. Chris Raymer, downstream, 1987, spiritual experience. The sad part is that we allow people sitting in these rooms to not even have their own version of a spiritual experience. It's like we're afraid to talk about it. I'm going to say this real quick. In the hospital where I work, what we're seeing is thousands of people come back into the hospital with long-term sobriety. It used to be 15 years ago when I started working out there, we didn't ever get somebody. 15 years sober, you'd stop the hospital. Everybody would be out there saying, "Buddy, what happened?" You know, be every little beehive around the guy. And now, probably a fourth of our community at that hospital has had 10 or more years of sobriety and lost it. Why? Because they stopped doing the things that got them there to begin with. And the disease got them again. We need to talk about that today, folks. What kills alcoholics is untreated alcoholism, folks. It's not the booze. There's a girl in the back that's been looking down the whole time I've talked. I said that, she looked up, eyes like this big around. What? No. That's what we have to do when we qualify an alcoholic or an addict. What we got to do is we got to find out, is the booze your problem? Is the dope your problem? Because if that's your problem, buddy, I got a quick answer for you. Let's detox you. Then we're done. Oh, well, it's a little more complicated than that. Yeah, no shit. Okay. Then stop telling me that one day at a time I can stop drinking and I can get well. Because I'm going to say it again. I may say it 100 times in the few hours I have with you today. Going to meetings and not drinking does not treat alcoholism. It does not. Not if you're the real McCoy. So, real quick. When a newcomer comes in, what we're going to try to do is I'm going to qualify him a little bit, that's what we're going to talk about. I'm going to set some parameters with this guy going in the door to help them understand what I expect of them. They need somebody to pamper them and mother them, and I need somebody I can call every minute of every day. I'm going to say, listen, I want you to meet my friend Ron, because that's not me. I ain't babysitting nobody. I'm going to be there at your beck and call in the first day's early sobriety. You with us? But after a period of time, we're going to get you on your feet. You're going to have to be, it's going to be you and God. I'm going to take myself out of the equation. And that's the problem with so many people, and they're afraid to sponsor people. I don't want to sponsor too many people, you know, because I just don't have time. I've never understood that. If you're sponsoring somebody, they're quite labor intensive early on. It's like raising a kid. Watching a lady on the plane yesterday with 2 kids, and I was like, I walked out, and I was like, God, I wish I had some money to just give you, you know, just juggling these 2 kids. She couldn't turn away for 5 seconds. How do you go pee when you've got 2 kids? I mean, how do you do anything? It's like, I don't have any. No, I don't want any. The kids, it's just labor intensive. But once they get older, you don't have, they're just, y'all with us? Examples of that in here. Little guys out running around, coming by, checking on you every once in a while. We stopped. I sponsor probably 35 guys. 2 brand new ones now. That's all I can do. 1 or 2 at a time, getting you through the steps. After that, I'm patting you on the butt. Welcome to the fellowship. You're in the trenches with us. If you got a problem, swing back by and let's visit about it. You with us? Call, check in. But I'm not taking you on the race. These guys that keep coming up to me, I need some face-to-face time. No, you need a freaking therapist. You need a therapist and some friends and a dog. That's what you need. Because you are wearing me out. All right. Anyway, the biggest gift, I'm going to do this real quick and then we'll pick it up in the next session. The first and the biggest gift that we can give a newcomer is qualifying a drunk. We got to qualify him. That's the number one question that I get asked all over the world where I'm at. I can be in Europe or I can be, I don't care, Ingram, Texas, it's the same stuff. People want to slide up. And they're usually really embarrassed about it, especially if they've been around the program for a while. And we may have some of y'all in here, and just don't be embarrassed, because a lot of people do. You come up and you'll want to ask. I said, like I'm not sure if I'm really an alcoholic. And I really feel sorry for you because it's frustrating to watch. It's sad to watch. Have you ever watched people come into AA and they just get comfortable? They're just like, they're home. They know that they're supposed to be there. Then you see those that come in and they just kind of circle the periphery and they never get comfortable. They don't chair any meetings and they don't, you know, they just in and out. They're not convinced to their innermost self that they're one of us. Now what we got to do, what we're supposed to do, our job is to give that cat a good case of alcoholism or show him another fellowship. That's our job. In 1980, I went to my first AA meeting and I walked in the back door trying to save a marriage and a business. And I was all banged up. I just finished a quart of beer in the truck and I walked up the door, up the steps. And somebody asked us, were there 12 steps? Oh, Jesus. We see symbolism in everything. It was an attic over an office building, but I walked up to this, and there's an old geezer sitting in this easy chair with his one light hanging down, and talking about a program of attraction. I didn't know if we were in an AA meeting or a seance. And I mean, it's scary enough to walk in the door, and I walk in, and there's like psycho, you know, you know, they're like, and this guy moves in his easy chair, and I see that this geezer, how long have you been laying there, Dad? I mean, you freaking me out, you know. He said, welcome, and he introduced himself, and he says, you know, my name's Jack R., whatever it was. And he says, do you have a problem with alcohol? And I said, yes, I think I do. Because I'm drinking now, you know, and sitting in this seance. And then my eyes cleared. People think I'm making this up. And my eyes cleared like this. And there was three other people in the room you couldn't even see. They were sitting in chairs. They were out. They were family members of a drunk. They were Al-Anon ladies. And so basically he said, well, welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I sat down in this little chair. And then we talked about their husbands for an hour. Rock on. I said, this is going to be good. I'm going to be back. I'll just be back drunker next time. And I went to other meetings, guys. But you know, you got to understand, the meeting that newcomer comes in might be the only shot we get at him. Y'all with us? It's the old AA stuff back in Texas. You know, this runs him out. Oh, the liquor will run him back in. You don't understand, guys. Sometimes we leave and don't ever come back. Why? Because we offed ourselves that night. We see it time and time and time again. There's a window of opportunity to do this, folks. We're going to talk about that in this next session. In fact, we probably ought to let some of you smoke because you look like you have the urge. We'll do that. Smoke, guys, come back. Can we do 10 minutes? Like 10 minutes. Like go smoke like you're going to go slow out there. Okay.